I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
G'day and welcome to The Call, 10 stocks picked by you, two experts, 1 hour. It is Thursday, the 13th of January. I'm Andrew Gagan. Great that you can join us. Let's introduce our experts on the show for this hour. Mark Gardner from Macro Capital and Luke Winchester from Merriweather Capital. Welcome to both of you guys. Mark, inflation. What inflation? What do you make of that market reaction to those that hot number out of the States?
They were expecting it overall. But you look, it's 30-year highs in inflation. Did a little bit of research this morning. Basically, when inflation peaks, it's peaked at this level. This is the third time in that 30 years. The market's had a pretty rough time of it over the next, over the next sort of 3 to 6 months. So essentially, whilst it was expected, I would largely probably, we'll likely see that switch to continue out of growth into value.
Yep. Well, Luke, anything you've seen then that alters your investment thesis?
Not a great deal. I must admit, I've probably been leaning more towards the transitory camp than you know, some sort of structural inflation. I just think the longer term trends against inflation are still well and truly in place. The main three being aging populations, the march on of technology, and just elevated debt levels globally. We global economies just can't handle interest rates up near 6-7% to try and match these inflation levels. So I must admit, you know, the figures have been very stubborn. I think that matches the commentary from the Fed. And the thing I've found most interesting is, like I said, I've leaned more towards that transitory and things will work out as bottlenecks ease and things like that. But a lot of updates from companies, and they seem to suggest that a lot of these issues around logistics and shipping and supply chains, you know, they don't look like sorting themselves out anytime soon. So interesting time ahead. I probably agree with Mark's overall, view of that rotation from value to growth, or at least out of growth, whether it moves directly into value or just, you know, cash onto the sidelines as people get a bit spooked. We've got a few names, you know, that are well and truly growth ones, and it's an interesting theme to be in right now for those guys.
Yeah, absolutely. Of course, we get greater clarity, I guess, in the States, at least when we're about to enter reporting season. So idea of where those companies are likely to go over the next 3 months at least. All right, let's get stuck into it as far as stock of the day is concerned. Today, we're looking at BHP. Now, a unification deal to consolidate the miners' securities on the ASX, that's coming up next week, in fact. And then, of course, the merger with its oil and gas portfolio with Woodside, that gives us pause for thought. In fact, Shemavaz, sending the following question: I'm a shareholder in both BHP and Woodside. Can you please clarify what happens to the BHP share price after the sale of their oil and gas portfolio to Woodside? What's the outlook for Woodside as a result also? And should I sell my BHP shares before the sale of its oil and gas portfolio? BHP shares currently up close to 4% in today's trade. Luke, a couple of questions to sink your teeth into there.
Yeah, there's a lot going on with BHP. The unification's interesting, bringing the London listing and unifying. They'll still have on the London Exchange, but there'll be a single legal entity, I suppose. But it'll have, some ramifications for the Aussie index. Their weighting in the index will go from about 6% to 10%. It's not small, and it'll be probably the largest business on the ASX. It'll overtake CBA and CSL. And it'll greatly shift the weightings of sectors, as we know, a lot of ETFs and even some more active managers sort of benchmark themselves to sectors. So mining will then overtake financials as the largest sector on the ASX as well. So that's probably just more of interest. I wouldn't look to trade around that or do too much around it. You know, these things, despite some headlines about it happening on one day, you know, algorithms and people have been sort of planning for this for quite a while. I don't think you'll see too much of a shake-up on the market on the actual day it happens.
Yeah.
The merger, and to answer the viewer's question, look, it's an interesting one, merging the oil assets with Woodside. Having a look this morning, it looks like a decent deal. You know, Woodside's effectively issuing shares to acquire BHP's assets. And if you have a look at the size of those two businesses, BHP's oil business is slightly bigger, but Woodside will be, 52 to 48 of the merged entity. So it looks like a good deal for Woodside. BHP obviously spinning off these assets almost as orphan assets, I guess. They don't really want to go ahead with oil and gas in this new green economy. So from a Woodside point of view, from a Woodside holder, I don't mind it. I think it's interesting. To answer the question about how it impacts the BHP share price, BHP will receive shares in Woodside, which they've already said they will distribute to shareholders, the instant they come through. So I had a quick look today. Their oil and gas assets were about 5 to 6% of earnings. So you may see the share price come off, you know, a bit like a special dividend. You'll see the share price come off to maybe that sort of amount, but you'll see some additional Woodside shares in your portfolio when they settle. So owning Woodside longer term becomes, your view on oil. There's differing views on that. But looking through the Woodside presentation, they had some interesting things to say about how they're positioning themselves for the future. So I don't have a problem holding both of these stocks. And I wouldn't sell BHP just to hold Woodside because you're not holding BHP for its oil assets. Okay. It's such a small part of the business.
All right. So take that as a hold, Mark. Then what are your thoughts on both companies, but more specifically BHP?
Look, I'm in complete agreement with Luke there. Overall, we were buying a little bit of Woodside yesterday. Just overall, those energy assets do quite well in the inflationary environment, etc. So, and that sort of switch, that switch out of growth into value, inflationary environments, they historically go okay on a sort of, I guess you could call it a seasonal basis. But, I'm happy to hold both overall. As Luke said, it's only about 6% assets there for the oil and gas. And look, I think BHP overall, I'm still very much a hold. If anything, I'd be buying any sort of dips. Realistically, we've been doing a fair bit of switching out of Fortescue into BHP last sort of week or so. That Fortescue valuation is getting a little bit stretched at the moment, so and Rio's sort of lagging on those as well in terms of the big miners. I think out of those November lows, BHP and Rio are up half of what Fortescue is up. So, I'm still pretty happy with it overall.
Okay,
I can see it. It's pretty close to broker consensus around $46, or so $47. But to be honest, I could possibly see it. Back above 50 at some stage this year. I think there's been a fairly dramatic rise in the amount of shorts in the Australian BHP. That just happened to rise quite significantly around when that large opportunity was available between the offshore, the listings and the Australian listings, because of the franking discounts, etc., from bank foreign holdings. So that may unwind and cause a little bit of a bid tone potentially. I think the shorts in BHP are up around the 8% mark. They're traditionally around about the 4% mark. So there could be a little bit of buying back that needs to be done there potentially. I'm definitely a hold on BHP and I'd be adding any dips.
All right, great. So in fact, it is already in the portfolio. So BHP stays in the portfolio. All right, let's get to the stocks as picked by you. The first one, Straker Translations. Yep, it is all about translations and the software that they have for that. Braden wanted to know about this. In fact, the company announced recently an acquisition to expand its presence in the European market, purchasing IDEST. That's based in Belgium, serves international institutions such as the UN and European Commission. Mark, Straker, what are your thoughts?
Look, it's not really the sort of business I'll be looking at getting involved with, particularly this year. never really made a profit. Big techs diversifying, or say Google Translate, etc., could just put a team on this thing and up the ante a little bit and push them out of the market. They've been a little bit of a roll-up trade. They've been sort of acquiring other businesses, relatively cheap sort of valuations, but to acquire clients, and they're still not really profitable. So as far as roll-up trades go, they're really they're roll-up trades overall. And you've got to ask the question why management can't go out and get that business themselves if their product's so superior. It's got one of the lowest macro scores out of 10 at 1.7 from our analysts overall. It's definitely an avoid for me.
Okay. Luke, do you agree?
Yeah, look, this is one I used to own and sold, and probably Mark touched on the main reason why, which is, very acquisitive. And my original view was that would come through into organic growth at some point, and particularly with margins. And to be fair to management, you've had a little bit of it, but certainly not as much as what you'd want to see for the valuation you're paying for this business. If you strip out the acquisitions, which you have to do manually, they don't actually give you great color on, their financial reporting of the different acquisitions they've made. But when I run the maths, it's sort of high single digit, low double digit organic revenue growth, a bit of margin expansion at the gross level, which is interesting. You like to see that. But when I went and looked at the last presentation, admittedly, I hadn't looked for a few months after I'd sort of moved on, a big ramp up in the operational cost of this business. And it went from pretty close to break even to now, $5, $6 million loss. And that's sort of not what you want to see in this environment. Market sort of punished it on the back of that. The acquisition the other day was interesting. The one thing I did note is they stuck to their original $50 million revenue target. Even though they've made this acquisition, which will contribute about $1.5 to maybe $2 million revenue in the final quarter. So next time they report, just double check that revenue target. If it stays at 50 mil, it probably means they've come in short of what they originally expected to do and had to top it up with an acquisition. If they do upgrade it to sort of 51.5, 52, then it means they're roughly on track. So if someone holds it, keep an eye on it. Look, I would probably say hold, to be honest. I wouldn't sell it today, but I definitely wouldn't be rushing out to buy it. I'd definitely need to see more execution at a margin level that you're seeing this growth, the acquisitive growth in particular, come through in profits.
Okay. All right. So an avoid from Mark. A hold from Luca, though he did sell it earlier. All right, let's get into whiskey. Yeah, maybe a little early in the day for it, but nonetheless, we're going to talk about Lark Distilling. Nick wanted to know about this. It is a premium whiskey producer in Australia. It has seen significant growth since its inception. And I think over the past year, it's up more than 200%, in fact, stock-wise. Did recently also acquire a distillery just north of Hobart, looking at essentially its maturity profile of its whiskey. Luke, what do you think of whiskey in particular, Lark?
Yeah, look, I like Lark. As you said, it's been a very good performer. Sort of drifted sideways now for the better part of maybe 6 odd months, but it had a very strong run prior to that. And now I think the fundamentals are maybe backfilling that share price run that you had earlier last year. Look, it looks expensive on traditional metrics. So last year, about $1.3 million reported operating profit, and you're talking a market cap of nearly $380 million. So it looks really expensive if you were to look at profit metrics, but it probably undersells this business because, as a whiskey business, these guys have assets that mature in barrels for many, many years. And so it's much better to view this business on the asset value of the whiskey they have under maturation. And the management team's done a fantastic job of growing that, not just by physically, having more whiskey under maturation, more liters, and also acquiring well, but because they're doing a good job of growing that Lark brand, it means that the value of that whiskey in the barrels appreciates over time because, they're managing to achieve higher and higher average sale prices through that brand growth and that focus on luxury. So, yeah, you've done a fantastic job, this management team. I went and looked at their last prezzo. They're very focused with their plan moving forward. I think it's like a 12-point plan of what they want to achieve over the next few years. So very clear with what they need to do, what they want to do. It's probably not cheap right now. you know, you're paying more than the current sort of whiskey under maturation valuation. There's a premium there. But I would still say it's a buy. And the main reason why is this is a stock that will be well and truly an M&A target at some point. The luxury consumer goods brands like a Diageo, a Pernod Ricard, a Louis Vuitton, Moët Hennessy, those guys will look at something like a Lark at some point. Most likely is it crosses into that maybe 1 billion sort of total value of the whiskey under maturation. And right now it's at about sort of 200, high 200. So I think it's still a buy, very interesting business and extremely well run. Can't fault management team for that.
All right, I should note it is currently in the portfolio. So as far as Luke is concerned, it's staying there. Let's see what Mark has to say.
Well, we could be doubling down. I think it's a buy as well. So they've done a great job management over time. The acquisition's really quite positive. It almost sort of triples their literage. It's about to goes up to about 1.6 million litres. From about 550, so they've sort of the acquisition as well because they've done well with their branding is really means that they you know what they've acquired they can sell it at a better premium. So just realistically, just by putting a new label on it overall. So and Tasmania has sort of you know really come on the map as far as whiskey. I think it's Sullivan's Cove won the Global Award in 2019. The single oak whiskey. They've got gin as well. The gin market is dramatically expanding globally overall. So I think it's a solid business. As I said, as Luke said, it does seem mildly expensive at the moment. But I think this company you more want to be looking at what they're going to do forward rather than. Woods overall. There's a big shift in drinking habits as well, not only in Australia, but so whilst people, particularly in lockdown, have been drinking more, the likes of spirits are basically, they think about up about 4-5% in terms of drinking or trends. So pretty much in line. I pretty much call it a buy as well.
Yep. Okay. Double buy. It's already in the portfolio. That's where it stays. Just reinforces that call. All right. From whiskey to oil, our next one is Cooper Energy. And in fact, Mark, you were just talking about not a bad place to be in an inflationary environment. And in fact, from the company, Cooper's saying supply deficits in Australia's southeast should support gas prices over the medium term. It has a portfolio of conventional gas assets leveraged to this theme. In fact, Bell Potter has named it as a share to buy this year. Thought it did have a bit of oil there, but it is mainly gas. Mark, how are you looking at Cooper Energy?
Like I said, I like the sector. These guys should benefit. I think it's big. There's apparently pretty tight supply in the East Coast gas market at the moment. They should generally benefit from that overall. There's nothing wrong with the company. It's got a macro score around sort of 5.86 mark. They've had a few issues with plants, et cetera, which the management reassures us that they've primarily solved now. So I don't think it's the worst thing in the world. I'm probably more of a hold. I think there's probably better alternatives within the sector. For instance, obviously, Woodside, not like for like, but say Santos has done quite well. Now it's obviously got those oil assets, oil search as well. So, if you're holding it, I think you keep holding it, but I wouldn't necessarily be rushing out to buy it at the moment. But I think overall that energy sector will do fairly well.
Yeah. Luke, obviously, Mark's outlined the benefits to the energy sector in the current environment. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, look, from a sector point of view, I probably agree. Look at the gas market, it looks pretty tight. The industry, the tailwinds behind it look okay for the players in that space. For Cooper in particular, the biggest issue these guys have, I actually used to own these guys many years ago. And followed the story closely. And the Mark touched on it there. They had some issues at the Orbost gas plant, which is owned by APA. And this was a plant that was supposed to do 68 terajoules a day of processing essentially just Cooper's gas. And they've just never been able, they've had issues along the time, never been able to just hit that nameplate capacity. And last time I looked, they'd managed to get it up to, it's actually out this morning, managed to get it up to 44 terajoules a day. So still well below that 68 they originally thought they could do. And unfortunately for Cooper, you know, they've entered into some long-term supply arrangements with some industries and heavy users on the basis of eventually hitting that 68 terajoules. So there've always been question marks over how that works with compensation, because it does appear to be an APA issue rather than a Cooper issue. APA are potentially looking at M&A around that Orbost plant as well. So there's a few things in the air. And so I probably agree with Mark. I don't hate the gas space in general. I think there's some interesting plays there, but I wouldn't look to do it through Cooper. If you are there, you know, you've written it down a fair way, and it does look like those operational issues are maybe not completely solved, but at least on the path to being solved. So you probably hold it from here. But if you were someone new looking at that gas space, I'd look at a few other names first.
Okay. All right. Prefer others. That's what Mark was saying as well. Perhaps Santos from his point of view. Mm. All right. Let's move to Murray Cod Australia. Dan wanting to know about this. Produces pond-grown cod in the Riverina in New South Wales. And importantly, I guess, you know, there's a lot of criticism for an environmentalist just about these sort of industries. This has one of the lowest footprints in that regard. Did recently embark on a capital raise. Luke, of course, one of these companies that's pretty much at the mercy of nature.
Yeah, and it's the big issue I have with them. I've never actually looked too closely at it before. So these guys are harvesting the Murray cod, which is a type of fish, and they're trying to position that fish as sort of a luxury good and really drive the price per kilo they can achieve. So right now, I think they're getting about 19. They're looking to get it up to 25 over time. And that's simply just by the perception in the market of the quality of it and utilising more of the fish itself. There's a few ways they're looking to do it. But it looks interesting. A couple of issues I always have with these types of businesses are, one, you just outlined it, Andrew, just the aquaculture risk you take, you know, because of the way these things are done. They do run different pools and different tanks, so you may be able to localise you know, disease and issues you may have, but nonetheless, you're always at the mercy of nature and something like that happening. And the second one, they're so capital intensive. So Murray Cod were pointing out that currently they've got about $45 million worth of gross profit in the, you know, in the pools of fish that are growing right now. A 2 to 3 year harvest period means that $45 million gross profit will come through the business in the next 2 or 3 years. But of course, they need to continually replenish. And so as investors, you very rarely see strong levels of free cash flow come through because they're continually building CapEx to build new pools and plants, but also then to populate them with fish. So it looks relatively interesting at 220 mil. You know, if you take that 45 mil gross profit, put in some operating costs, and, you know, of course, you've got to pay a bit of tax, you're probably paying about 10 times earnings for what's in the water right now. But it's that replacement cost that always gets me with these guys. I would hold it if you're there again. You know, I'm on that hold theme right now, but I'd say another hold. As long as you understand that aquaculture risk, there's also plenty of M&A in this space right now. You know, you've had a few of the salmon guys and some of the other aquaculture guys have approaches. So there's possibly a bit of that in the price. So continue to hold. But it's just not one that ever I really love to come into these sorts of names.
Okay. Mark, and I should point out, this is currently in the portfolio. Luke's got a hold on it. It comes down to your call.
Look, I probably like it a little bit more than Luke. I wouldn't call it a buy necessarily. I'm probably still along the hold lines. Obviously, the aquaculture industry particularly, I mean, you know, there's risk there, but the freshwater is, you know, a hell of a lot less risk than the offshore stuff and the salmon, etc. So, and they've done a huge amount of their CapEx. It was pretty much largely behind them, really, overall. They did a good deal with Woolworths. So they're sort of getting into some of their premium Woolworths stores, trying to build that brand there. So that'll help them get up to that $25 mark that Luke was talking about before. It's in a sector that, you know, if we do have some rocky times this year, it's as sort of Luke calculated, that PE is roughly, or that profitability roughly around 10, which is not exceedingly, exceedingly high. So, you know, that consumer staples sector should stay relatively well bid overall. They're fairly healthy. You are at the mercy of the LFOs, but look, we've got a strong buy on this. It's pretty in line with the with other analysts in the market. We've got target prices around the sort of 51 marker. It's got a macro score of about 8 for us, which is really quite high. So I think this one could do quite well overall. It's a hold bordering on a buy for me, realistically. I just think overall, I'm a little bit wary of market weakness at the moment, just generally. So it's not something. It's after having a good run last year. It's not something that something I might look to pick up on any sort of pullback.
Yep. Okay. All right. Well, that does mean it does stay in the portfolio there. All right. Let's move on to Medibank Private. Samira wanted to know about this. Of course, it is Australia's leading health insurance provider. Share price, I think, was up about 20% in the past year, in fact. Now, of course, in this space also, a lot of them had to hold off on their premium increases given what went on in the pandemic. That was a drag, clearly. I think that was for about 5 months, in fact, that went on for. Mark, Medibank Private, your thoughts?
It's not something generally I tend to look at. I think, look, insurance should do better in a rising interest rate environment. I guess getting a little bit more for their for their premiums that they're storing overall, as most insurers will. But with an aging population and it's got an above sector PE as well. Probably prefer NIB in this space, but overall, it's not really a subsector of insurance that we're really sort of flocking. Nothing wrong with the business at all. It's got a reasonable dividend yield. It'll be relatively defensive, I suppose. But obviously, with the government holding down your pricing power, I think a lot of these healthcare providers, I think HCF and Bupa particularly, are really getting quite heavy into consolidating those sort of medical centres and debt and things like that. I think that's probably where there'll be a little bit more growth and profitability. Medibank, probably, yeah, it's a hold, I suppose. I think I'd probably be looking, elsewhere within the insurance sector, maybe for a better return.
Okay. All right. Luke?
Yeah, look, I agree with Mark. It's just not the sort of stock that I like. A big behemoth, it's low growth, it's so heavily regulated, so you're never going to see growth. They're not allowed to grow effectively. The government obviously caps their premium increases, and the latest increase was the smallest increase they've had for over 20 years. So, look, you can grow slowly, and if you've got a good management team, you can obviously focus on costs and see some margin expansion. The bigger issue I've got with the space is, health insurance is one where younger, healthier people effectively subsidise older, more prone to being sick people. And that ongoing trend of young people just shying away from private health insurance has continued, and I think was only exacerbated through COVID. Mark's right, NIB, you definitely pay more for it. They do a much better job of attracting that younger cohort, primarily through their marketing and different things they do. Medibank, about 3.5% yield, 20 times earnings. It won't go backwards. It's the sort of business, like I said, it's a big behemoth. It's not going to go anywhere. So if you're a real dividend-focused investor, or you're really, really conservative, I suppose, it's maybe something you'd look at, but definitely not for me. For anyone who's after growth or just a modicum of that, you'd sell it. If you're someone who's a dividend or just really conservative, you could probably hold.
Okay, hold, perhaps a sell, depending on where you're at. Okay, thanks, Luke. Let's summarise our five stocks plus our stock of the day. We began with BHP. And of course, it's just as far as its listing is concerned, consolidating certainly on the ASX as far as its weighting is concerned. Also got that merger of its oil and gas assets with Woodside, Luke saying that's a good deal for Woodside. The merger makes sense. So he's got a hold on it. And Mark also has a hold on it. And he's sort of seeing perhaps potential there to buy any dip. It's in the portfolio. That's where it stays. All right, our first stock as picked by you, Straker Translations, in that translation space. Mark saying, look, stiff competition, particularly from the bigger players. They could simply just walk in there. He's got an avoid. Luke has a hold. He, in fact, sold it earlier. Lark Distilling, and that is all about premium whiskey. It is in the portfolio. It's staying there because both have a buy on it, even though Luke's saying it looks a little expensive, but it is impressive and a potential M&A target. Excuse me. Cooper Energy, primarily gas, and Mark saying, well, it should benefit energy in general in an inflationary environment. He's got a hold on it, but he prefers Santos. Luke saying, yeah, he prefers others also in that space. He also has a hold on it. Murray Cod Australia, producing cod grind in the Riverina. It is in the portfolio. It stays there. Luke saying, look, there are those risks with aquaculture, you know, being at the mercy of nature, obviously. But Mark's saying, look, CapEx is behind them. They've got their offtake agreement with Woolies. That's certainly a positive. Mark has a hold with a potential buy on that stock. And finally, their Medibank Private. Look, Mark's saying insurance, that's going to do well also in a rising inflationary environment. Look, he prefers perhaps NIB. Luke pointing out, look, low growth, heavily regulated. He's got a hold, but perhaps somewhat reluctantly. All right. Let's keep going. And our sixth stock is Cash Rewards. Greg wanting to know about this. Some 330,000 members, around 3.5 million transactions. ANZ likes it. In fact, its innovation and venture capital partner, 1835i, set to complete the acquisition of it after taking more than 90% stake in the company. So, Luke, do you like it? Cash Rewards, what sort of reward is there for investors?
Well, they've had their reward. I mean, look, I don't like it in short, and I think anyone who was a shareholder of Cash Rewards should pen, you know, Shane Elliott a thank you letter, because this was a business. I don't think this business was ever going to make a profit if you looked at the limited financials it released to the market in its short-listed life. You know, the idea of heavy cash burning businesses is if you've got a strong moat and you know a strong gross profit margin at the top level, you can sustain heavy operating loss, knowing that you'll recoup those losses back as those users stay on your platform or you know continue to use your service. Cash Rewards didn't have that. It was burning heavy losses, but the churn was still high. You constantly had to acquire those customers back. I think 1835i has given you the bailout. Take it and run. It's almost certain to go through now. I'm probably not much point of a buy, hold, sell. But if we were, I would have said sell. I think this is a yeah. You know, it was a business that would probably never have turned a profit in its life.
Yeah, probably a bit of a moot point now. But Mark, your thoughts?
I don't like the business at all. That cash burn is huge. In the very short lifetime, they had two cap raises. It pretty much is it's a very good lesson in red flags. For investors out there, if you're involved in a company that's got similar stats or behaves like this, just get out. and look, that space really, it's the cash rewards part, realistically. Like, even not a lot of people know, but like Raise Invest has, you know, 100 plus partners on their rewards. It's all about sort of steering customers and lead acquisition, really. So, as you said, a moot point, but it. I agree with Luke. I'd be sending a thank you note in with the acceptance of your of the share offer.
Okay, all right. That's a double sell. We're in no doubt about what our two experts think of Cash Rewards. Monadelphous Group, and Caleb wanting to know about this. It is the engineering company, has struggled given skills shortages, wage inflation, of course, which may yet to really take effect. And we've also seen it fall out of the ASX 200. Mark, Monadelphous.
Obviously, we're getting towards the end. Omicron's largely going to teach us to live with COVID overall. In my opinion, we've got WA restrictions they're set to end around February 5. Labor over there was voted in on the lockdown, similar to Queensland sort of scenario. So they could continue to be, but I think in the end, things out is people need their jobs and they need to be making money. I don't think they can sustain another year of just being locked down and not being able to get fly in, fly out workers in there. So Monadelphous is best in class, really. It's of a large scale. It's got relationships with all the big miners. Just about all the big miners. So look, I'm going to say, the numbers don't look great at the moment just because of the lockdowns, etc. We are going to have lows, and the problem should ease overall. It's had a couple of guys at the lows here around the 980 mark, or 980 mark. So I think if it was going to fall through, it would have by now. So I don't mind this going forward. It's probably a decent reopening trade. Commodity prices are still really, really quite high. And I think one of these big, these bigger engineering and mining services providers they're probably going to have everything in place a lot quicker than the smaller guys potentially. And it might be a lot easier for them to attract talent to the bigger company, because I guess those FIFO workers are going to want stability after a really unstable period with their job security. So you probably want to be going with
I think we've lost you there for a moment, Mark. We'll see if you're still with us.
Yep. Are you there?
Yep.
Okay. Look, I don't mind it overall. I think the bigger scale is going to help them attract talent, and they traditionally done a fairly good job overall. I think most analysts have got a decent buy on it. It makes it very hard on the previous numbers it is a bit speculative in terms of whether this is going to recover, because we've had a few false starts. But I call it a buy with this stop around the $8 mark, sort of thing.
Okay. Maybe a speculative buy, but you've got a buy on it. So that's interesting. Luke, your thoughts?
Yeah, look, I'm pretty negative on the space as a whole, being sort of fixed price contractors or service companies. I think it'll be a very, very difficult time for these businesses, because you're dealing with some pretty severe input price inflation, be that supply chain logistics issues, Monadelphous and the others are calling out wage price pressures. There's a lot of things to manage, and you need to be a really good business to manage your way through it. Now, I think Mark's right. I'd call Monadelphous probably best in class. Pristine balance sheet too, which is important, because if you are going to have issues with maybe cost overruns on projects and things like that, the last thing you want is a balance sheet that doesn't offer you flexibility, because you only have to think back to an RCR Tomlinson or a Decmil Group of the blow-ups you can have with these fixed price contractors if they are unable to stop the spiral of the input prices moving higher. It does look optically expensive on 20 times earnings. They've sort of forecast FY22 to be slightly down FY21 as well. Big exposure to iron ore and oil and gas. I think generally those sectors and where they are in their CapEx cycle should be supportive for Monadelphous. I struggle to hold it just coming into the environment we're about to. I think, like I said before, you need to be an exceptionally good business to navigate a time like this. And Monadelphous may be that. I'm actually probably talking myself into a hold the more I think it through. But I definitely wouldn't step in and buy just until you start to see some commentary from the business that some of those headwinds and issues are starting to abate.
Okay, that's Monadelphous Group. Luke, let's move on to Viva Leisure. Oliver wanted to know about this. It's about fitness management. Of course, this is one of those areas that has taken off, certainly during the pandemic, as people have started being looking after themselves, I guess, nothing better to do. It recently acquired 8 Rebalance Pilates and yoga studios in Australia. Yeah, Luke, interested to see what you think of Viva Leisure then.
Yeah, these guys, you know, manage a bunch of gyms around the country, franchise some of them out as well. Obviously very COVID impacted as lockdowns, you know, they were locations that were forced to close in certain states, depending on what sort of level of lockdowns we were in. But I think it's a good, genuine reopening play. And the reason why I would like something like this over your more obvious travel names is these guys have already proven that the rebound in their reopening can happen quite rapidly. So if you go back to earlier in 2021, when there was limited restrictions around the whole country, they were run rating about 8 mil revenue a month. That fell, you know, to below 3, I think, at one point when New South Wales and Victoria were at the peak of their lockdowns, but bounced back very quickly to I think 6 mil by October. So, you know, people do get back to gyms and things like that very quickly once restrictions ease. It's not like travel where I think people have been a bit more hesitant to come back. So if you look at sort of that run rate I said before, 8 mil a month, and the profit margins they were doing prior to COVID, I think this trades on about 8 times EBITDA, you know, when we're able to get back to no restrictions, which may be question marks over exactly when that will be. But I sort of agree with Mark's point when he's talking about Monadelphous. I think we're probably through the worst of Omicron now. We're learning to live with it in a sense. So, you know, if I'm paying 8 times earnings, I actually think it's a pretty good idea as part of that reopening trade. So I would have Viva as a buy.
All right. That's interesting. Mark, do you agree with that?
Look, I don't mind the company overall. It is a trade. They've done fairly well to survive over this period. Really, I guess the scale helps them there. I think people will, from a social perspective, want to get back to the gym and sort of get out there. And there's only so much, you know, home equipment you can buy, etc. So there might be a bit of a shift out of that. The names like Rebel Sport and things extraordinarily well over the period. So probably want a bit of a change up from exercising at home, etc. They couldn't possibly have had a worse period over the last couple of years, and they've managed to hang in there. So I'd say it's a speculative buy overall. But obviously it just depends. I think we're going to be through most of the COVID issues, you know, generally, and then it'll be a space of learning to live with it. But, you know, your risk is that if we get a strain off Delta, which obviously is the far more fatal strain, then, you know, how long can this company last realistically? Because I think beliefs and all that sort of thing, it sort of gets to a point where, you know, you... that many times. So, if the reopening goes well, I'm happy to buy it.
Interesting. A double buy. Viva Leisure. That means it is going into the portfolio. Okay. Our next stock is PointsBet. Now, it is aiming to launch in New York later this month. Also announced a deal to become the exclusive sports betting partner of the NHL Alumni Association in Canada, also official partner of the association in the US. Sol wanting to know this about this. He says, my holding is down almost 40%, and I'm wondering, should I cut my losses or not? Mark.
It did get to some pretty lofty prices. The whole sector overall has been pretty beaten up. Names like bet makers, etc., as well, they've been hit quite hard. It's a really saturated space. They're consistently getting licenses. They're Virginia, etc., as well. They've got a pretty decent marketing campaign, but I think there's 170 operators plus in Australia, and there's a pretty low barrier to entry overall. I think at some stage you'll probably see maybe a bit of consolidation as people drop off. I don't think you probably need the risk right now overall. It is trending down. If it manages to come out in the clear and starts to make really good money and take advantage of that, the large US market with gambling being legalized over there, I think you'll have your opportunity to buy back in and when it sort of bottoms out. And look, it did a cap raise, sort of around that $8 to $10 mark, I think. And once it slips through there, it's been really hard going ever since. I don't think you really need the risk in that sort of risk in your portfolio at the moment. There's any other solid sectors around. I think the long term PointsBet could come out and make good money, but I think we're a while away from that at the moment, and I don't think it's a year for to be put on hope of growth. I think you need to be more so focusing on investments with proven track records, because I think that companies like this are probably going to be the most vulnerable over the next 12 months. So it's a sell probably for me, and then
All right, just lost you there a little bit. Obviously, you're saying to revisit it once it sort of bottoms out. Luke, your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree with Mark's last comment there that this is the sort of business that in the current market is set to struggle. I mean, it's substantially burning cash. At the first quarter run rate, close to $100 million a year is just unbelievable. Admittedly, they've got a lot in the bank, got $600 million in the bank, so they've got a good runway there, but the market's not looking favorably on businesses like this right now. The real issue they've got, though, and the reason why the chart looks like it does is, for what they're spending, they're reporting good absolute growth in the sense of their numbers look okay. But you have to remember they're in a very rapidly growing industry over there in the US, and their share of the US betting actually took a pretty sharp fall in their first quarter numbers compared to what they were in the fourth quarter, particularly in the New Jersey market, which New York has now legalized. But prior to that, New Jersey was a funnel for New York betting. So it was, seen as the large market to try and win. And their share in New Jersey fell from 7.8% to 3.9%. So that's the issue that PointsBet has is they're spending a lot for growth, but they're falling backwards against some of those peers that are more well capitalized and larger than they are over in the US. So this is a sell for me. Like I can't comment on Sol directly, what he should do with his shares. But as an idea, like PointsBet is just an obvious sell. I think it's a commodity business, and you're dealing with, as Mark said, hundreds of competitors, some of them much more well capitalized than you are. And smaller guys can just pop up overnight, now using some off the shelf software products. So definitely not for me.
All right. So don't bet on PointsBet. It's a double sell from our experts. Finally, we're looking at ARB Corporation. Terry wanted to know about this. It is the four-wheel drive accessories company. Benefited during the pandemic as Aussies hit the road, wanted to go bush. Interestingly though, Credit Suisse saying that its pandemic margins aren't going to hold up in coming years. Luke, do you agree?
I think you have to, Andrew. I mean, it'd been a while since I'd looked at ARB and went back and looked at their AGM Prezzo, and they provide the charts to go back 10 years of their financial revenue and profits. And this was a business, I jotted down the numbers, their compound revenue growth over the last 10 years was 7.4% and their profit growth was 5.8%. In FY21, that exploded to 34% revenue growth and 97% profit growth. So, you can't argue anything other than a massive pull forward of demand as borders were closed and all of that travel expense that would normally be shifted overseas or to other places was forced into retail, consumer discretionary and domestic travel, and ARB benefited massively from that. So that will unwind at some point. Look, the AGM, their commentary was still positive for first half 22. They think they'll still show growth over first half 21, which is impressive because first half 21 was a strong result in and of itself. But I haven't read the Credit Suisse note, I must admit, but at a concept level, I agree with that headline, that those margins have to come down and the rates of growth, if not the absolute levels of growth, it may even fall to a decline in FY22. It's a brilliant business, and the strategy of buying the dips on brilliant businesses has been a winning one for better part of a decade. I hesitate to say we're changing that market dynamic, which both Mark and I have touched on a few times, as we enter the Fed in the US pulling back and rates rising. I don't know if now's the time to be buying dips, and I think you can actually sell ARB today and come back at some later point in time if it's one you want to own. So I would, despite being a great business, I would actually say sell.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, Mark, your thoughts then?
Even though it's had a fair bit of a decline the last few days, overall, they're not going to be able to maintain those margins as the supply chain issues sort of subside. For you're waiting up to 6 to 9 months for a Hilux, say, for instance, or, you know, 4 odd months for Ford Ranger. My father's on a farm, so that ended up actually making his decision on which car he was going to buy. But I think their ability to increase the margin there was because if you're not upgrading your existing car or a used car, but I think a lot of these things now there'll be options when the new car market sort of starts to pick up again, and I think they'll have to start bringing down their prices. You know, overall, it's been an incredible run. It is a well-run business, and look, I think you just I think you take your money at the moment. It's gone absolute gangbusters overall, and then a business gets to a certain point where you've had a good run and it's just time to take profit overall. I really can't see this company getting anywhere near the share price growth that it's had in the last 12 months, that's for sure.
Yep. All right.
And I think there's much better places for dividends.
Okay, all right, that's a double sell then on ARB Corporation. That rounds it out. Let's just summarise where we've been for the second half of the show. We began with cash rewards there. Luke saying, look, this is never going to make a profit. It's just burning cash. He's got a sell on it. Likewise from Mark, he doesn't like it. He says it's got a red flag all over it. But Monadelphous Group, that was our next one. Mark saying, yeah, look, given it's an engineering company in terms of skilled workers and the like, it has been hurt, particularly in WA with those restrictions, although he says it's best in class. So he's sort of got a speculative buy on it. Luke has a hold. He's generally negative in that space, and he says it also looks a bit expensive. Viva Leisure, it goes into our portfolio. It's a double buy from our experts. So Luke's saying strong reopening play there. Mark pointing out has been hurt by COVID, but it is all about fitness management. He's seeing good opportunity there. And then to PointsBet, its expansion into the States. Mark saying, look, not making money, an opportunity to buy back in once it bottoms out, but it's risky. He's got a sell on it. Likewise for Luke saying it's set to struggle burning cash. So no, not looking at it, sell it. And ARB also a double sell from our experts. Luke pointing out the best of it, best is behind it. Given the pull forward of that demand, Mark saying they simply can't maintain their margins. That is ARB Corporation. All right, well, that is the 10 stocks plus our stock of the day. Thanks to our experts, Mark Gardner from Macro Capital and Luke Winchester from Merriweather Capital. Guys, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Andrew.
All right. And any stocks you'd like us to cover, flick us an email, call@ausbiz.com.au, or tweet us at AusbizTV. And a reminder where to find those stocks we have in the calls portfolio. You can head to ausbiz.co/portfolio.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.